Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. Come on in. Grab a seat. Or if you're already seated, you can stay seated or stand up. However you want to listen. Thanks for doing it. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University. This show and all of CJSF's programming is produced on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples, who've been here since time immemorial. And as we reflect today on the results of our federal election and react to some other reactions to the results of the federal election, Alberta threatening to separate and local Indigenous nations reminding the Alberta government that there are treaties and people who were here long before Alberta existed, long before BC existed or Canada existed, and that we must be respectful and mindful and consider that in all of our decisions and the things we do. So thanks for joining with me to honor that and talk, well, listen to me and today's co-host Danny. Hello, Danny.
How's it going? This is Danny Nesvedarani.
Just dropped you right in there.
Yeah.
but you're gonna hear us talk a little bit about the results of the federal election on Monday and some other stuff. Danny's got a piece about wildfire preparedness, and as usual, though, we will be starting with a little bit of local music, and it's going to shock you if you're a regular listener. Going right back to the well. This is, once again, new music from the new Devours Records Sports Car Era. This is Armageddon Mood Ring, and when we get back, we'll talk election results.
The call.
Armageddon Mood Ring by Devours from the new record Sports Car Era, which you can find most places you find music. Go give it a stream, or even better, buy a copy from Jeff. It's great. He could use the support. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, here with Danny.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good. I didn't get a ton of sleep last night, but other than that, pretty solid. I don't know why. Just sort of laid there in bed trying to sleep for a long time, but you know, that happens sometimes.
You were just thinking about these election results.
Yeah, just stewing. No, so we are, as mentioned, going to, both at the beginning of the show and just now, we are going to talk federal election results. And Danny and I both participated in a whole bunch of pre-election coverage with some interviews with local mayors and a few political candidates, as well as we participated in the NCRA, the National Campus Community Radio Association's alternative election coverage on Monday night. If you tuned into CJSF from 5 to 10:30-ish, you would have heard that broadcast and heard Danny and I popping in a couple times. So that's just to lay out our bona fides, our qualifications for talking about the election. Before we dive into specific results, which you, the listener, I'm sure are already pretty well aware of sort of how things broke down. We ended up with a liberal minority. Danny, do you have any sort of big overarching thoughts or impressions of the election campaign?
Yeah, I think this was an election that was very much dictated by a couple key issues, and a lot of them relating to things outside of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only about 4 months ago, it seemed almost guaranteed that the Conservatives were going to form government, mm-hmm. a majority government for that matter, and that is not what happened at all. And I think a big part of that had to do with sort of the Trump effect. And I think that's something that we were able to pick up on, not just through our own, you know, personal connections and what we see on the internet and in our daily lives, but through a lot of the candidate and mayor interviews we had. This wasn't something that people shied away from talking about as a key election issue. And I think that also came through with the end results as well.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You say it's not something that people shied away from, but I do think that also kind of broke along party lines or voter intent lines. And I think it's pretty well agreed that the response or perceived response to Trump and the threat of annexation, or at the very least the sort of economic trade war threat reality, that played a big part in how voters voted in the election. But the Liberal Party definitely saw that that was a big issue and campaigned on it, whereas it seemed like the Conservative Party sort of Conservative Party aligned people we spoke to tried to steer the conversation away from that. I think that was a big factor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was just a matter of never being able to properly pivot in that direction. You know, clearly they had support, and you could argue whether that support stemmed from people that were in support of them or people that were just vehemently against the iteration of the Liberal Party that was under Trudeau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting because I think a lot of it also comes down to how seriously one takes the threats from the United States. I think for a lot of progressive voters who rallied around the Liberal Party, they saw these threats as very real. Whereas I think conservative voters maybe thought it's just more bluster from Donald Trump. And so I think just in reading discourse and talking to a few people, that seems to be one of the major things is a lot of conservatives are upset that the Liberals won by focusing on Trump instead of other sort of platform issues. And a lot of Liberal voters or other progressive voters are happy to have the Liberals in charge instead of the Conservatives to deal with this threat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it's interesting. You know, we do have a minority liberal government. And for a while, it did look early on like it might be a majority. And polls were suggesting ahead of the election that the Liberals were headed for a majority. But it did end up a minority, just barely. The Liberals, three seats,
I believe so,
short,
yeah, 169
of a majority. The vote share, of course, very close, just about 500,000, 480,000 votes difference between the Conservative and Liberal parties nationwide. That's 43% of the vote, 43.7 or 41.3% of the vote. That shows that the country is definitely divided. You know, this wasn't a resounding victory either way. And I think looking at the results on a map by electoral district, this becomes even clearer, right? That there's a big sort of western-eastern divide, but I think when you zoom in even more, there's still a huge urban-rural divide in terms of how people are voting and what they want to see out of a government.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that's something that changed all that much, and I think that has been the case in Canada for a very long time. Even in BC, I think a lot of times people think of BC as being more left-leaning or liberal, but really they're just referring to the Lower Mainland, because mm-hmm. if you zoom out even a little bit within the more rural interior areas of the province, it skews conservative, and that's been the case for a very, very long time.
Yeah, there's one riding in BC, Kelowna, that outside of the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island that was not conservative, mm-hmm. right? And so I think, and that breaks down along urban-rural as well, you know, of the interior, Kelowna leans more urban than the rest of the province outside of the Lower Mainland. Danny, did anything surprise you about this election?
I think one thing that surprised me is, while I knew that the NDP were not going to perform as well as they have in the past, I think some of the ridings they lost within the Lower Mainland did surprise me. Specifically with Peter Julian, we talked about this a lot on election night, but with Peter Julian in New West Burnaby-Meyardville losing his seat in a pretty tight three-way race between him, Jake Sawatsky, the Liberal candidate who ended up winning the riding, and the Conservative candidate in that riding. Peter Julian had been someone serving within that area for a very long time, and it did seem like Mark Carney's sort of cosign within that area did do a lot in helping Jake Sawatsky eventually win that riding. But that was something that surprised me, that a lot of those NDP strongholds weren't able to maintain.
Yeah, one thing we... like you said, we've talked about this a lot, so it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly when and where. But we talked about, the NDP's collapse overall, which I think the consensus is that a lot of that is driven by strategic voting and the sort of anything but conservative model, and people, the Liberals, doing a much better job of identifying themselves as the strategic vote regardless of riding, which is not really how strategic voting works in theory, but they capitalized on that. But also my impression was that the Liberal Party spent a lot more time and effort and presence in British Columbia than the NDP did. And that it almost felt like some of these NDP stronghold ridings were kind of taken for granted by the NDP.
In a sense, yeah. I think one thing that sort of, I think maybe goes against that a little bit is the fact that, you know, especially within some of these NDP ridings that ended up going to the Liberal Party, there were times where the NDP candidate would be third place, and second would be a Conservative candidate that had essentially zero presence within any of the all-candidate events that happened throughout the election period. So I do think it is just a matter of the NDP never, like, regardless of how well a candidate performed, a lot of times people are voting for a party, and if they don't mm-hmm. have trust or support that that party is the viable alternative, there's not so much you can do.
Yeah, and I think when, as we've talked about, the election really came down for a lot of people to the question of who do you want in charge to deal with this crisis, this budding crisis, and it really came down to, do you want Mark Carney or Pierre Poilievre? And Jagmeet Singh was never really in that conversation. And as a result, I think, like you're saying, a lot of those votes that maybe could have gone to the NDP ended up going Liberal. As you mentioned, a three-way race. I think I said it right.
Yeah.
It's a tongue twister. In New Westminster, Burnaby, Myardville, also a tongue twister. Jake Swatsky ends up winning by about 2,000 votes, which is 4% of the overall total. And you got to think that having the Liberal leader show up to that riding twice during the campaign period in New Westminster, where, you know, most people who are from New West will just tell you they're from Vancouver to
exactly.
avoid having
yeah.
to explain what and where New Westminster
not
is.
Not a huge city.
No. So I think that makes a huge difference, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for voters in New Westminster, Burnaby, Myardville, seeing Mark Carney come here and pay attention to this place was motivating and made a difference. And something that came up in, well, every one of the mayor interviews I did, and I think a few of the ones that you did as well, was this idea of giving Greater Vancouver, giving the West Coast a voice in Parliament. It's related to the whole Western alienation thing, but its own sort of specific BC version of we often feel forgotten out here from the federal government. And I think that, you know, having a bunch of ridings that are now that are for the party in power, maybe that addresses that concern to an extent, or maybe that voters saw it that way.
I think that's a factor for sure. I mean, yeah, when it comes to that sort of feeling of Western Canada being forgotten, we're not talking about like the Danielle Smith Alberta version of it. We're speaking on the fact that a lot of times with elections, there'll be people in line in BC waiting to vote still, and the election will be essentially decided by Eastern Canada. And I think because of that, there have been times where candidates won't prioritize Western Canada as much. I mean, you saw that with, you could argue that Jagmeet Singh lost his seat because he wasn't as much of a presence within Burnaby Central.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue the same with Pierre Poilievre and his riding as well.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, having that sort of, and I think that's the argument that candidates such as Jake Swatsky was arguing for. You know, if you vote for me, I will be that voice in Parliament that represents your community because I will be of the party that is going to win this election.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you mentioned Jagmeet Singh, and you know, for NDP voters, historically NDP voters, you would think that the NDP over the course of the last parliament, over the course of the last few parliaments, has been relatively successful in terms of you know, getting pushing for pharmacare and national dental plans and things like that, but does seem like and maybe this is just the plight of any party leader, it does seem like the sort of local stuff gets left behind, forgotten, is less prioritized. And when you have a system that to be elected requires you to be elected in a specific place, it makes it harder. It's a hard thing to balance.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quirks of the sort of Westminster parliamentary system, right, where it's not like in America where the president is, you know, everyone votes for the president. A lot of Canadians do vote with the party leader in mind, but that's not necessarily how the system is set up. Well, it's not how the system is
mm-hmm.
set up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, as much as people do often vote for a specific party, there are ridings that have had the same MP for just decades, pretty mm-hmm. much, because people just really like that person, regardless of party.
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about Vancouver Centre with Hedy Fry, that's been Liberal forever, right? Well, it's
11th straight term, yeah.
Yeah, it's been Hedy Fry forever. And maybe that's not the greatest example of a place that wouldn't vote one way that is, you know, that might have a certain voter intention but votes for a specific candidate. But, it's interesting how the electoral system itself influences the results, mm-hmm. right? Another thing that was not as big a conversation this time around, but has been, you know, was a big part of Justin Trudeau's platform when he was elected for the first time and showed up in Pierre Poilievre's riding this time, was discourse about proportional representation or different kinds of voting systems and how they might change results, they might change the way that people vote. Do you have any thoughts on different systems of voting, whether it's proportional representation or ranked ballot, or and how that might influence things?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that the current political system, with first past the post, is structured within Canada, makes things difficult because, you know, you could argue that we have three major parties that lean towards the left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could argue one way or the other for the Liberals, but and really, you know, since the Conservatives kind of consolidated, there is sort of one major conservative entity, which again lends itself to people sort of strategically voting and consolidating between which party that's not conservative that they think has the best chance of winning. And Justin Trudeau ran on a campaign of changing that up in 2015, and clearly that was a factor in him winning. I think that is something that people are interested in. I think the majority of people, you know, will in a riding will see a three-way race between two people or three candidates, see that one candidate has won by 34% of the vote, and if they didn't vote for that candidate, that means that the vast majority, 66% or 56% of that. No, I'm sorry, I'm doing my math wrong here. 66% of that riding did not vote for that candidate. That's a big deal, and mm-hmm. I think that whether that's proportional, whether we switch that up with either proportional representation or a ranked choice sort of system, you know, personally, I'm for it. But I guess whether there is the political will to actually advocate for that, I'm not sure, especially because I think the current system does benefit the Liberals in a way that would be hard for them to advocate against.
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, for any government that gets elected with the current system is disincentivized to change the system that got them elected, mm-hmm. right? But interesting that it is starting to talk about that is starting to bubble up a little bit a decade after the last time it was seriously talked about. We mentioned sort of in passing a couple times the ridings of Burnaby Central and Carleton, where Jagmeet Singh and Pierre Poilievre, party leaders respectively for the NDP and Conservative Party, lost their seats. What do you think that says about the parties and the leaders themselves?
I think they're different situations to an extent. I think with Jagmeet Singh, the riding changed, and the last two times that he won within his riding, which was Burnaby South in the previous two elections, he didn't win by a whole lot. I think it was about 10% or so each time. So, you know, the riding margins changing obviously had an effect. But I do think that there just comes a certain time. I think every political leader within Canada has an expiration date. And I think he kind of got to that point. I think people just weren't weren't able to ride behind him in the way that they were before. And with Pierre Poilievre, I think a big part of it, well, there clearly was a large contingent of people that weren't just not crazy about him, but were against him, right? When you look at that polling sheet and you see about, what was it, 70?
90-something.
Yeah, 90-something candidates, most of which being independent, because they just wanted to split the vote to the extent of, you know, not having him be elected. I think, you know, with him being the incumbent within that riding for so long, I do think... I'm honestly at a loss for words. I'm not really sure what to parse out of that.
I think there's a couple things for me. I think his vocal support for the trucker convoy during COVID, which happened in that riding and in adjacent ridings where people in that riding work, I think that might have cost him. But I think what I see from it is that... you know, the conservatives were more successful this election than previous elections, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, for a while it looked like they were going to run away with it before the liberal leadership change and the Donald Trump tariff annexation threats and all of that. But I think that perhaps what Pierre Poilievre was most successful at was uniting progressive voters against him. I think that... he came to represent a very scary vision of the future of Canada for progressives that mirrored a lot of the sort of MAGA Trump rhetoric and talking points. Whether or not that was who he truly is or was, that's certainly what he represented. And he didn't necessarily do anything to try to distance himself from that in any substantive way. And so... you know, in his riding in particular, you saw a really strong concerted effort by progressive voters to strategically rally behind the Liberal candidate and put their votes behind him so that Poilievre would not be elected. And, you know, it's a pretty resounding defeat in his riding, right? By 4,000 or so votes. You talked about all the independent candidates that were there as part of a protest against him, but also as part of an electoral reform protest to show how silly it is that there can be 90 candidates on the ballot and only one of them advances even. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all of those votes would have come nowhere near to bridging the gap, right? And so there was a real repudiation by Carleton voters of Pierre Poilievre and what he stood for. I think it's interesting that he is